This slot is promised to Kaz in Essendon, who rang after the first pre-season match when there was a bit of down of the mouth about Melbourne. They'd lost to the Bulldogs. She said to be calm, to believe and to hold the faith. She's been right the whole way through. Kaz, congratulations and welcome.
Jared, I'm going to try not and cry, but my voice, as you can hear, I've been celebrating long and hard. Thank you for that intro. That makes me feel, that's amazing. I didn't cry after the game. I drank a lot of champagne. I got the flag and ran up my street singing the theme songs. I don't know what the neighbours thought of this woman. Yeah, it was just amazing. I never wavered. I rang my Robin, who I go to the football with, we spoke at half time, and I said, what do you think? She said, no, I'm confident, because all year they've been able to do that. They've been able to come back, and they did exactly, they just executed what they had to do. And I think the moment for me was when Harms just took that ball, he intercepted it. And a couple of years ago, he probably would have kicked it anywhere. But he looked up, saw Bailey Fritz lead out and hit him on the chest. And I knew then, and then the wave happened. And I never want to hear 57 years again. And the most thing I'm going to get is, over the years barracking for Melbourne for a long, long time, people would say, oh, you know, they sort of had pity for you. Why do you barrack for Melbourne, you know? Now I said, because it's my team, and that's what you do, especially in Victoria. You never change your team. And now I can say, why back for my football team? Well, this is it. And I'll never hear those words again, which you used to hear a lot. When did you last win a flag? Well, now I'm going to say 2021, and hopefully more on there. And I am getting my tattoo.
Adam's in Taylor's Hill. Hello, Adam.
Lifelong Melbourne supporter, and just absolutely wrapped. I'm of a similar age bracket to yourself, Jared. I'm 45 years old, experienced the highs and lows of being a Melbourne supporter early in life. 1987, I was there on that day at the Western Oval when we got over the line by 15 points, and I remember 30 or 40 people standing around Dad's transistor radio hoping that Jason Dunster would kick that goal, and he did. But 3 weeks later, I was at Waverley Park.
Yep.
And in that pocket, I was sitting where Gary Buchanan tore our hearts out, and sorry, a bit emotional, but
so you should be.
I was at the 88 Grand Final. I was at the 2000 Grand Final. Go to several interstate games every year, and just what we saw on Saturday night was just amazing. I did have mum and dad over because I was worried their hearts might give out, so I was giving them some care. And to have my mum and dad and my 13 and 14-year-olds who were a similar age to what I was back in 87, it was just a fantastic night.
It's beautiful, Adam. It's beautiful. Yeah. That's what footy should mean.
Yeah, it was awesome, Jared. And it made all Melbourne supporters' hopes and dreams come true, mate. And coming into that last quarter, you know, Demon supporters have always had our hearts ripped out. So we weren't sure that the game was over probably till we got to, 50 points up. So, we were still hanging on the edge. Even though we're 4 goals up and in normal circumstances, the game's over at the start of that last quarter. Until we got to about 50 up, we didn't really start celebrating then. And then it was on. So it's been, fair to say, it's been a big couple of days since then, Jared.
I hope it has been.
Yeah, very, very, very exciting.
Scott's in Box Hill South. Hello to you, Scott.
I'm going to try not to lose it here, but, for me, it's footy's the tie that binds families. And, my family, this means everything to us.
It's a Monday means test that is going to mean a lot for a great many. I suspect it's one for posterity. David King, welcome.
Morning, G. Another belter. What a fantastic game. The emotion of all of it. It was hard not to get swept along with it. I mean, we work with Gary, but to see him present the cup was just awesome. His young bloke's in here, Ben, and we talk Melbourne every week when we come in. He's been the most nervous man in Australia. I really enjoyed coming along with the Melbourne fans. The Dogs, it wasn't the same emotion. Okay, it's a grand final and you're hoping to win them, obviously, but they'd sort of had this type of emotional build-up 5 years ago. So it just, I don't know, I think if you're a neutral, you just couldn't help but get swept along by the constant Melbourne emotional feedback on social media or friends or people you work with. That was just fantastic.
We've been blessed to have these droughts end. Sydney, Geelong, Bulldogs, Richmond, Melbourne. And I think there is that craving today is let St Kilda have this moment in the not too distant future as well because of what it means to people.
But this is the argument that I have, and we get in trouble for making these comments, but sometimes the part of the journey, the struggle in its infancy makes it worthwhile. Like if you just win one every X amount of years, it doesn't mean as much. So when you get things wrong and you go back to the drawing board and rebuild again, it's terrible. It's awful as a fan and you hate it at the time. But then when you do get to this point, you say, oh, this is what people have been talking about. This is why winning a flag as a fan is so good. Oh, I've never felt this way. I've never experienced the nervousness of another finals campaign, the heartbreak of the failed campaign that always leads you into premiership success. You know, so you know, if you're the Saints, or, you know, that this is part of the journey. If you're the Kangas, if you're whoever else is down the bottom. Look, the Gold Coast Suns, their fans can't see anything coming. You know, GWS fans go, oh, we've had so much heartbreak and we've been so good. This is part of it. This is why it is so good when you win one.
So what's at the core of it for you? We play big themes here and then we're going to go quarter by quarter. So less about the game and more about the overall, what Melbourne has put together and what we've seen reveal itself in the earliest stages of this season and then come to full fruition on Saturday night.
So the best bits, is that where you're getting to? I couldn't. It's funny where your sort of mind takes you when you watch a win like this. And I think when you win premierships, you've got to talk about every component of the football club because they're full club. It's a full club involvement. There isn't an area of your club that you say, oh, we don't. It doesn't really matter if we get that right. So you're talking strength and conditioning, list build. You know, not just your list build in terms of your draft, but picking the eyes out of those that are available for free agents, the right trades. At the right times, so never getting ahead of, you know, ahead of the curve, ahead of where you are. No missteps, if you like. So that's a committee decision. There's probably 8 or 9 names or people that are involved in those sort of conversations. Then you've got to get your leadership right, and then you've got to get your game plan right, and then you've got to want to play team footy. So all of those things sound easy. They sound really easy. And Jono talks a lot with you about this sort of stuff, but you don't know until you know. Sometimes you think you're trying and then you see the next level trying and you go, oh, hang on. You think you're leading in the right manner. Then you see it and you go, oh, hang on, that's what it is. Okay, right. Now I know what you're talking about. You know, you talk Jack Riewoldt. Jack Riewoldt changed as a person, as a leader over the last 5, 6 years, and he's a different product to what we saw for the first 6 years. So that sort of thing has happened at Melbourne. And I think you've got there's a couple of names that are getting lost in all of this. I think that the appointment of Paul Roos to just steady the ship years ago, what are we talking, eight years ago, to just say this is going to take time. Let's not rush. And he talked about building their percentage from 54 to 70 or something in a year. And people went, oh, hang on, don't worry about percentage. When are the wins coming? When are we playing finals?
Yep.
So to strip it right back, get the recruiting right, teach the players how to play, teach them how to win contested footy. I think Brendan McCartney needs some credit here. He's had his fingerprints on these contested possession bulls. And those lessons never leave you.
Yep.
And then you add the layers. Adam Uzay comes in and says, hey, instead of, you know, you win the ball, great, but instead of quick kicking it, how about you step out of traffic? How about we do a bit more? How about we be the better version of what you are, Petrarca, Oliver, Viney, Harms? Step out of traffic. The young ruckman, Jackson, he did it 4 or 5 times. So there's not an area of the club you shouldn't talk about. So I think you've got to go right back. This has been eight years in the making.
And we've never really had a grand final like that before, have we?
Oh, it was brilliant. It was so good. The first quarter you thought, oh, Melbourne, this is... We talk about the system of the game. So Melbourne holding a player behind the ball, the holding advantage... versus the Dogs' rolling advantage. They had the plus one around the football. So it didn't matter how many times the Dogs won it. They gave it back. They kept giving it back. And I'm thinking, well, this is what Melbourne want. They want to stay set behind the footy and then just keep coming at you, coming at you. So they set up their lead playing the way they play. And I thought, oh, this could get really ugly on the score. But then all of a sudden the Dogs come back. You go, wow, how good's this? Star factor performances everywhere. Look, the Stars really turned up, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
We'll get to the specifics of them later. But, you know, to see the big names put it together on the biggest stage for both teams, we had high scoring. The game lived in contest. If you couldn't compete, you were gone. And we'll get to some of those guys as well later on. I mean, it's all well and good to talk about what Melbourne did in that 16 goals, 4-1, goal one. But a lot of this stuff happened at an area where the Dogs knew they had a problem. At the coalface, at stoppage, young ruckman exposed again. You know, you know what you know. You've got no knowns coming into these games. And it was exposed on the biggest of stage. We will now talk about Max Gawn as an icon of this footy club. So it was Max's graduation day for me. Like, he's going to be a revered figure now at Melbourne. He's been a large part of the reason why they're here. And I know we had a caller last week, and I agree, we don't talk about Nathan Jones the same way, because this has been Max's cultural shift. So that's sort of where my mind was going. And then for some weird reason, Jared, the father-son got ticked off for me on the way. I mean, it had a different component, having Jack Viney with the hooks back to the Todd Viney era.
Yes.
The whole Melbourne past players sort of lived through that, and a little bit through Gary Lyon, who was there. It was just the perfect time to have Gary in Perth to connect all the parts of the fans that were 70 years of age and 15 years of age. Yep. I just thought it was just perfect.
So I'll give you a couple of what they got right and what they got wrong before we delve into our quarter by quarter.
Yep.
So I'm going to call this the prophecy. We have been so lucky to have Craig Jennings as part of this program for the last couple of years to give you derivative thinking, to open imagination. But the one thing he believes in is you've got to see it early. So I went back through our notes, and as far back as round two, he had Melbourne as the team. But this was from June 10.
And so Melbourne, if you're going to win a premiership this year, you have to get through them. I start with the players that in each area of the ground have an impact on the other five players around them. In the midfield, it's Petraka for me. So he's the Dusty Martin. And I just believe if you don't find a way to stop him now, because what he does, he impacts when it counts. And that's the important thing. He's dynamic. He's going to start winning Norm Smith's.
So that was the flag and the Norm Smith medal on June 10. So Geno's father was a card counter. Geno's a shark, I reckon.
Now, Geno's, it's been great listening. It really has. And how he's not in AFL football, it just amazes me. But
clubs are surely waking up to that way of thinking to add to your mix.
Worked with a lot of people in footy and spoken with a lot of people in footy, and a lot of them just say the same things, Jared. You don't want same at your football club. Have a look at Melbourne. Tell me what's same about Melbourne that's ever else. Nothing. They're a different bunch, and they love being different.
What they got right, so that's the time slot for me. It's the 5 o'clock time slot. Start in natural light, drift into the evening, present the cup under lights.
Don't know about that.
So that's it for me, but I don't want to fight with anyone today. So that's it. But you can't deny that there is the biggest audience for the game is there at night. And that's there again. It's factual. It's statistical. To argue the inverse is to argue literally that night is day. So if you want your biggest audience, the game goes at night. I happily sit in the twilight. My compromise is I would happily have 1 in 4 grand finals travel to the country. They can be the night grand finals. And the 3 MCG grand finals out of 4 can be in the afternoon. So we can protect the tradition there whilst delivering. Like, if Perth would be 16 years away from its next grand final, and they would start counting the days today. And Adelaide, I feel for the people of South Australia, they're not going to get that. It's that deal shackles the national game. What they got wrong, I'd like you to take this back to your friends at Champion Data. Removing a possession post-match is poor practice.
No, it's not. No.
So Steve Smith scores a century, And then in the aftermath, we go and go, oh, do you know what? He didn't tickle that one to fine leg. It was a leg by. Ump called it as a run. He made 100. No, he made 99. So 20 minutes after the day's play, we go, oh, no, Steve Smith didn't make a century. Bat raised to all corners of the ground. He only made 99.
Oh, Jared.
No, that's the like for like.
No, it's not.
Of course it is. Petrarca broke the record for possessions with a hand pass in the centre of the ground for 40.
Do you like the...
And then he got docked a possession in the post-match.
But what if it wasn't his possession, Jared?
It doesn't matter. In the moment that it happens, if it counted, it counted.
No, but you're asking...
You're searching for perfection in the aftermath.
We've got goal review, haven't we? Don't we serve...
How did that go on the weekend?
Well, you talk about it every week. That was awful on the weekend, by the way. But look, I think if you're going to talk about records, then they've got to be correct.
So are you happy with Steve Smith? We're going to dock you a run for a leg by and take your 100 away from you and make it 99? Because what we did.
No, we didn't.
Of course we did. He broke the record. Break the record.
Steve Smith standing at the other end, there's no confusion as to who's batting. It's Steve Smith. There's 15 players within 10 metres, Jared. So if someone who's calling a stat in the run from 80 metres away, level 3, calls handball Petrarca, handball Oliver, kick so-and-so, and the guy who's double-checking in the back office to make sure everything's 100% correct, because clubs need perfection, they demand it, that's why they pay the dollars, and they say, hang on, correction on that one, wasn't Petrarca, override, it was whoever.
It wasn't a handball, we're not going to, the ball fell out of his grasp.
It happens regularly.
This is like an inside edge onto the pads, which is either there or not there, which is scanned.
Yeah, no,
denying him the record.
You got one player batting.
They got that wrong.
You got one player batting.
They got that wrong.
There's no confusion.
The wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock, who's seen it all in sport. That was one hell of a weekend. Crash, hello.
Hey, Jared. I'm not quite as excited as Joel. What a great story. And then, and well done on you for profiling, not just at major moments, but everyone attached to the team, and it's like supplying the fruit and saying it with such pride and bravado. I loved it. Good on you, Joel.
Do you know any Demons fans?
Yeah, look, Mike Coward, famous cricket writer, Patrick Smithers, former champion cricket writer who, you know, it's a family, tradition of his family to follow the Demons. And I think, Jared, you know what? The reason I'm so happy for them, they got to enjoy that last quarter stress-free. I mean, you know what it's like going for Geelong or someone in a tense grand final. Do you actually enjoy it before the final hooter? Often not. But to skate home and have that blissful last half an hour is quite something, isn't it? And I have to say, the AFL Grand Final has changed my tip for the NRL Grand Final, where South will play Penrith. I'm going for the fresher team, South. I think Penrith have been beaten up a little bit the last couple of weeks. They're hot favourites. They're about $1.60. But I just seen that freshness and class sail through from the Demons. I thought at some point teams break in playoffs. And, we saw that from the Bulldogs, didn't we? But that's why I'm tipping South Sydney this weekend.
So it was, the Storm performance was jarring, Crash. The ball handling right from the start. It was an extraordinarily tense match. But I've kept thinking, it's Craig Bellamy must be sitting in the box wondering, they haven't turned in a performance like that in two seasons. And there it was on preliminary final afternoon.
It was. They're the masters of composure. They never get rattled. They play to a system, and the system is near flawless. And guess what happened? They snatched at it on the weekend, and they snatched badly, and they stumbled and fumbled. I do agree. There was a nice bit of commentary early from Michael Ennis, which I totally agree with. And he said, the temptation when you're playing the Storm is to be a bit reverential towards them, to let them push you around because they're the Storm, and be a little bit sort of, oh, we'll cop that. Well, they went the opposite way, the Panthers. They sent on Tevita Pangai Jr., their substitute, and to really rattle Christian Welsh and to sledge and to sort of stir the pot. And it did. It rattled them. And they were average, you know. And look, there was nothing in at the end. Like most teams conceding the amount of handling errors the Storm conceded would have lost by 26.
Yep.
You know, they were just feathered out in the close finish. So that says a lot about them too.
the TV ratings for the game. Sports Industry quoted that the Storm final in Melbourne rated 193,000. Previously, prelims had rated 87,000 and 108,000 up against big AFL finals. So there was absolute vindication in being able to more than double your audience by steering clear of the AFL grand final.
Yeah, exactly. And it may have cost Penrith the Storm the game too, because daytime games, you get cleaner handling, and the Penrith were, that they part of their tactic was to go wide and clean and clear, which they did, and it worked. So, you know, I don't think Melbourne benefited any way by the earlier game, except for the television ratings, which, as we said, taking on the grand final would have been just ridiculous, and thankfully they didn't do it. And there's the vindication in the numbers.
After Friday night, there were a few hours just to ponder what Wayne Bennett versus Craig Bellamy in a grand final might have been. It's not to be, but Wayne Bennett is there again, which is, when you think back over it, so last year he saunters back into Origin, causes one of the great upsets for Queensland, and then mic drop, just sort of walks away from that. And then here he is taking in another team. Is it his 10th grand final appearance?
It is, but here's the killer stat, Jared, spaced over five decades.
Oh.
I mean, it's extraordinary, really. You know, the former policeman, and you know, I went back into the archives the other day and got these old photos of Wayne Bennett when he was a policeman in riots, escorting protesters away. You know, he's had a colourful life, and he said he hated it when he was a policeman because he left school in grade eight, Jared. His mum, she was married to an alcoholic, and Wayne said, I'm going to go out and earn you some money. So he went and worked at the meatworks, got into the police force at 15, and all his wisdom is basically self-taught. He's a terrific story. Controversial character, I get it, but has the ability to relate to people and looks down on no one. Like, when he was a policeman and he threw guys in the back of the paddy wagon, he said he hated it sometimes. It would be some down and outer, and he really hated it because he thought, I could be you. I could have been you, you know. So he just has the ability that he's not on social media. You know, he thinks Twitter's for the birds. I've got every reason to say why he doesn't connect to the young kids, but he just does. He's like a grandfather to them. They take the mickey out of him. And he can say things to him like this, Jared, like, can you get a haircut?
Yes.
And if any other coach saying that to a player, you're in trouble, aren't you? But they sort of say, yeah, all right, Wayne, you know, and they laugh. It's just... it's quite unique, Jared. It really is.
That grand final is so much richer for his presence, that's for sure. So we'll talk some cricket in a moment, but the Ryder Cup, you were so looking forward to it, Crash. I didn't see a whole lot of it. There's been a bit going on, which made it a busy weekend, but it seemed particularly lopsided.
Oh, yeah. Well, Greg Norman just tweeted that he thought this is the best team he's ever seen in Ryder Cup history. They're the youngest United States team. They completely annihilated Europe. For once, the numbers were right. The United States had nine of the top 11 golfers in the world, and they fired, they were unified, and they just slaughtered them. They were far too good. I'm entranced by that drive of Bryson DeChambeau's, which went 417 yards, 380 metres it went. Like, you can't hit a golf ball that far. Like, it's amazing. And I keep waiting for him to fall apart, to go pop, you know what I mean? And suddenly there goes a disc in his back or a neck or something. But it was kooky, spooky stuff, and they were just far too good. And, you know, for once they really look like a team as well, and a very young team. A team unscarred by a lot of former losses to the British. This team was totally unscarred.
I tell you what I did catch, Crash, on Friday night and then again late yesterday afternoon was the Women's One Day International, so Australia and India. At just the end on Friday night where Australia got the reprieve on the third umpire review of a waist-high full toss, that is a hugely controversial moment, and it literally decides the game.
Well, it did. The Indians had thought they'd won it off the catch. And the third umpire came into play and ruled that it was just above waist high. And I felt the video probably got the third umpire over the line. But it was a desperately tight call, Jared. And, of course, India have won the third rubber yesterday, third game yesterday, to end Australia's 26-match winning streak. But the game on Friday was one of the greatest games of one-day cricket we've ever seen in Australia. male or female, yep. the marathon chase, the stumble, Beth Mooney playing the innings of a life, and then, of course, the last ball dramatics, which I love when cricket takes us somewhere we've never been, you know, with just sort of a complex last ball ending. Oh, it was absolutely superb.
And then yesterday, that had lashings of drama in it as well. And by the end, Australia's 26-match winning streak in the 50-over format is done.
Yeah, it is. And they've got a test match up on the Gold Coast from Thursday. And that's great. You know, I know the girls are so looking forward to it. They've got injury problems in both teams. And it could be, you know, a lot tighter than, you know, what people would have thought of a couple of weeks ago. But this is becoming a really nice... The television ratings are rising accordingly as the series progresses, and I'm really looking forward to the test match, which, of course, is a day-nighter.
So Australia's been untouchable for a little while, but this is on. I'll make the case they should be down 2-1. They're up 2-1 with the points format in the test match and then the 320 over, 20 over the T20s to finish with. So this is on. Australia's been untouchable for a couple of years in women's cricket, but this is line ball stuff.
Well, and you know, you can tell they don't fear Australia so much, the Indians. This rivalry has built up over about 3 or 4 years now. And of course, it peaked in last year's T20 World Cup at the MCG. But even Elise Perry, I don't think she took a wicket in the 3-1 days. And you could tell she went at about 5 and over. And so, you know, they don't worship at Australia's altar. There's a healthy rivalry between them. And It will grow further in the test match for sure.
The men's side of things is, was there a breakthrough on the weekend with the quarantine conditions that are going to be facing England?
Yeah, in as much, Jared, in that if you really want to make this Ashes tour now, you will commit. It won't, quarantine shouldn't stand in your way, because I think the quarantine, let's not call them concessions, but the rules that the English team will face when they come to the Gold Coast and stay at the Metricon, they'll be enabled out of their rooms for 3 or 4 hours a day to train. That's really significant, because all the players say just that escape from the room for training is all you need to sort of, it really freshens you up during that 14-day quarantine period. He said the difference between being in your room and training is completely different. They may be allowed to walk around the resort, which will be, you know, another breakthrough. So I think there's a degree of optimism in England that the draft sent by the government to Cricket Australia to England was actually a little bit more sympathetic to their cause than what they thought. So the proof will be in the pudding. We'll know soon enough, but there's been no pullouts. No one's made an early call. As you know, that's not good enough for me. I'm questioning, I wonder too, whether players, do they fear they're going to get, you know, absolutely sliced and diced on this tour? Do they think it's going to be another Ashes tour where Australia's going to win 4-0? But Michael Vaughan wrote a very good column saying, Test cricket is on trial here. What does it really mean to these players? I mean, for goodness sake, this is an Ashes tour. It's not a bilateral one-day tournament where you could pull out at will. Do you want to come or don't you? The game is on trial.
The Perth test is clearly in jeopardy. I heard Mike McKenna with Dwayne Russell on Friday. He's just said it can't happen as matters stand. And Christina Matthews is in your papers today saying the same thing. So do you think there'll be a test in Perth?
Oh, huge worry. Under the current, at the moment, under the current time date, it's 0 out of 10.
Yeah.
Like, it just cannot happen, because there's a 4-day gap between the fourth and fifth test, and it's the last test. So, and it's very hard to change the scheduling, Jared, because they've already started selling tickets. And once you do that, and there's a lot of tickets sold, it just complicates everything. So, would be more likely that test to be played in Sydney or Canberra. I think once they wend their way around towards Melbourne and towards Sydney, which is the fourth test, it will be hard to leave. But there are so many factors against that Perth test. I mean, even getting the DRS from that has to leave well before the earlier test. It's a big process setting up the DRS van and everything in Perth. So no one can quarantine in Perth in 3 or 4 days. So yep. Unless there's a major relaxation, that one's cooked.
And the Sheffield Shield season started. Do you know how I knew that, Crash? Sean Marsh made a century. Just business resumed. Straight back in. Century. Raise the bat, Sean. Thanks for coming. You're a marvel.
Jared, there's some quirky stat told to me by John Townsend from the Western Australian that no one has played longer for one state than Sean Marsh has played for WA's 21 consecutive seasons. Like, it's in the ballpark. So I may be corrected on that, but it's an incredible stat of just, he is remarkable. Started at what age, 18 or something like that, 17?
But God, I smiled when he made that 100.
I know. And the other 100 too caught me. Cameron Green, 7 Sheffield Shield 100s by 21, age 21. That is outstanding progress. And this kid really is exceptional, Cameron Green. All the raps on him, and Greg Chappell occasionally just picks one that goes. Like, he was on to Steve Smith when he was a boy, Ian Healy, and he said for a couple of years now, he said, Cameron Green, put him in all your doubles, trebles, multiples. He's a superstar.
Travis Head made 163, and Sean Marsh is batting again today. So life is rather beautiful.
You love him, Jared, don't you?
I always
you
have
really
done.
Do.
Well, he just keeps making runs. Bless him. For everyone who would be down on him, he just walks out there in Sheffield Shield cricket and keeps making centuries.
Well, I'll put this one to you. No sportsman, I think, in Australia have ever copped more and warranted less in terms of their personalities. Like Mitchell Marsh and Sean Marsh, both Mitchell's an extrovert, Sean's an introvert, but they're really, really nice guys and the least offensive guys in Australian cricket. And don't they cop some?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. It is extraordinary, isn't it? Like, mild-mannered Sean, like you, the lightning rod for bad publicity. Like, he if he ever said boo to a goose, he'd apologise on the spot.
It'll be a few weeks before we talk again, Crash. I'm looking forward to it already. The cricket season will be in full swing by then. We'll be in Ashes countdown mode. So thanks for your Mondays right through the footy season, and I look forward to talking to you shortly.
Can't wait, Jared. See you then. Have a nice break. Bye.
Always benefit from the wisdom and experience on a Monday of Robert Craddock.